So the we're going to go ahead and get started. The next item on our agenda, we are at item number 5, recommendations of the funding methodology subcommittee, which subcommittee has been very busy over the last few months. The materials begin at page 25, and we have Jake Chatters on the line, who's going to help walk us through some of the recommendations or all of them. We also, just so you know, one of the items on the agenda today is under that item is how to handle inclusion of our state's smallest courts in Waltham, and Jake and Debbie Norrie, who's present here today, led that small group, that committee. So Debbie's here to answer questions and weigh in as well. So Jake, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. And let me know, try and jump in over the top of me, or someone can send me an email if you can't hear me at some point.
Let me ask.
I apologize for not being there in person.
Jake, can I ask also, would you, we can certainly put the materials up on the screens here in the boardroom while you walk us through that. If you're going to be referring to any of the spreadsheets, would you let us know?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so as is in the memo and as Judge Earl just mentioned, the subcommittee related to the Waltham model started meeting in the fall. I'm getting some feedback here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. I'll ignore the feedback. We started meeting in August and met throughout the fall, and we're here presenting 6 recommendations in total. I'm going to walk through them in parts, starting with numbers 1 and 2, and hopefully then we can put it back to the full advisory committee for any decisions on those, and then proceed with 3 and 4 together, and then 5 and 6 take each separately. So the group did meet many times. Last meeting was held on December 10th and voted unanimously to recommend numbers 1 through 5 to the full advisory committee, and number 6 was dealt with via email after the meeting due to some questions that had been outstanding. So I want to start, if there are no questions, actually moving to page number 27 in your packet. And this relates to recommendation number 1, which is that starting with fiscal year 14-15 allocations.
Stephen, can you put that up for us?
Go ahead, Judge.
Go ahead.
Okay, starting with that year, instead of using the BLS, which is the Bureau of Labor Statistics modifier for each county, instead of using that year's average, we'd use a 3-year average. So this recommendation comes from what you're seeing on largely on page 27. There'll be some more details later that I'll talk about. But on page 27, this spreadsheet shows by county what percentage of their government employees are local government employees and what percentage are state. As you may recall, the way the factor works is that in the event, question is as follows. Does the county have more than 50% of their government employees working for the state government? If the answer to that is yes, then the court receives a BLS factor that looks at both their state and local government employment information. If the answer is no, then it looks only at local government. That's what's showing here. So for Alameda, for example, 84% of government employees are local, 16 are state in this comparison. And so then going to the right of that, we started looking at what the BLS averages were. And the reason for this analysis is that there was some concern, particularly from the smaller courts, since this was an issue of the Cluster 1 courts, that the BLS factor was going to be ranging too much year to year. And what we were looking at is that in some cases, it might change by 0.03% or even 0.01% has such a major impact on the FTE allotment that could be difficult for courts to deal with. So we started looking at what would the 3-year average do instead. And so what this chart shows you is what the 3-year average is for the local BLS for each court, what the 3-year average is for the state employees for that court, what that combined average is there, and the column says 3-year average BLS, state and local, 92. And then to the right of that, it shows you, well, for that each court, what would their factor be if we looked at a 3-year average? compared to on the far right what their factor would be if you looked at just a one-year average. Now, it's not on this spreadsheet, and I'm going to talk a little bit about, and we'll get to it 2 pages later, is what you're not seeing is what was the BLS factor in 2011, and in 20, which is what was used to allocate our funds for 13-14. So I'm going to give a couple examples. For Imperial, I don't mean to pick on anyone individually, this is just illustrative. In 2011, Imperial's BLS factor was 0.76. So if you look at the far right column here on this spreadsheet, you'll see that Imperial's number for 2012 increases to 0.88. So from 0.76, it goes to 0.88, which is a fairly large increase. Using the BLS average over 3 years, it would be 0.77. So why do that? And the answer is that, well, that's great when your BLS number is going up. That means that your, well, great is relative, but your need is going up, which would result in a larger need for your court to expend funds. The problem is that some go the opposite direction. So the other example would be, I'll use Mono County. In 2011, it was 1.19. And if you see there in the far right column, in 2012, it becomes 1.17. So it's going the opposite direction. And there were some that were larger than that, but that just happens to be the one I picked out. And so our concern was that as those change, and let's say they go down, and let's say there's a major year in which something changes in either state or local government employment that we couldn't respond to as an individual court based on our contracts with our employees and our commitments to our employees, we want to make sure court isn't unnecessarily penalized for that. And likewise, if there is a major growth for some reason, we want to make sure we have time to adjust to that growth. And so what the subcommittee looked at and what they're recommending is that for all courts, not just the small courts, we average the BLS over 3 years. And we chose 3 years because that's consistent with our filings numbers, which we also average over 3 years. And the intent of it is just to kind of create some smoothing on either growth or decline so that we as individual courts have time to adjust to that, and also to make sure we don't have wild swings, which we shouldn't, but even control for and make sure we don't have wild swings in what people's needs would be from year to year just because of a change in the BLS. Does that make sense?
Let me ask if there are any questions for Jake on this particular issue from the committee members. Judge Good.
Jake, on page 29, I think it is, the heading says differences between update for 2012 BLS and original. Is that the three-year average, or is that the one-year number?
Okay, so actually that's a great question, Judge. Let me go straight to page 29 and walk through this spreadsheet. If you're with me, this one is sorted by cluster instead of by court name. But we'll walk across the top first. There's a cluster column, the court column. Column C there is what the WAFM need was when it was presented to the council. The next column, which is Judge Good's question, is column D. When you take the WAFM model from last year and all you do is update the fact that we have new BLS data. So the BLS data is by calendar year. So for the 13-14 year, we used 2011 data because that was the most recently available. We now have 2012 data. So if all we did was change that BLS number, column D shows you what the court's need would have been if that was all that was changed and presented to the council. So what that started to show us is if you go over to column F, there, which is to the right, we looked at some of the smaller courts and you saw for courts of that size some pretty major changes. You know, Trinity has a major change that shows up there. You see Inyo at a negative 26,000. And that's just because the BLS number was modifying. And that's really why we looked at the issue to begin with. And if you go to the next, so going to column E incorporates changing into a three-year average BLS for all courts. But there's also a second recommendation, which is our recommendation number two, that's also in that number, Judge. So that looks at also changing the FTE allotment, which I'll talk about and walk through. So does that make sense? So column D is just saying if all we did in WAFM is update it for 2012, court's need would change because the relative FTE allotment would change in those counties based on that BLS number.
Fair enough. But does that mean that there's no column here that isolates the change from 2011 to the three-year average?
That's correct. You're right. There is not one that isolates just that change for the cluster one courts. Okay. However, this spreadsheet, the second recommendation doesn't impact anyone except smaller courts. So if you were to look at all courts other than the cluster one courts and MODOC, oh no, those are cluster one, sorry. All the cluster one courts plus Lake County, Siskiyou, and Tuolumne. For all courts I didn't just name, this does isolate that change to the three-year PLS. Does that make sense, Judge? If you were to look at column C to column E.
But doesn't E also incorporate the other change to take care of the small courts, the cluster one courts?
It does, but that only this is looking only at need, on the need side of the formula, so that recommendation changes the cluster one and those three courts I named. It changes, that's incorporated here, but for the rest of the courts, that item doesn't impact them at all. Okay. In fact, let me get to that point real quickly, and we'll come back to this part. So what Judge Good is bringing up is on page 28. When we looked at these numbers and talked about the BLS factor, one of the items that came out and jumped out of the page, which is the items highlighted in yellow, is that for some courts, when you looked at the statewide FTE dollar factor times their BLS factor, you got a number that was under $40,000. And why is that a concern? Well, let's take MODOC. MODOC County, the number there is $34,685. They have an FTE need of 9, so let's assume they have those 9 FTEs. Well, one of them is likely going to be a supervisor or management employee that probably is making a relatively higher salary, probably more than $34,685. And once that's the case, then the rest of the employees, that dollar amount gets driven down really low and probably to a level that is not practical. So what we wanted to look at is, well, how do we deal with that? Because this is one of the key elements of the model is making sure that we are recognizing a variation in cost of living or the economy in each of the counties to make sure we're giving a fair amount throughout the state. And so what we did is we turned to the federal and the state government and other factors that sometimes you have to make an exception for very small organizations. And very often that number is 50 employees, and that there are certain other rules that apply to organizations of greater than 50 employees and some with less than 50 employees. So what the subcommittee is recommending is that we adopt a minimum FTE dollar factor that would be applied in circumstances where a court has a need of fewer than 50 employees. So in this chart, if you go to column C, that shows you which courts have what their FTE need was in the last run of the model. Column D says, well, which courts have a need of fewer than 50 FTEs? And then we said, well, if we have those, what number should we use for their dollar factor? So what we discussed and decided upon was to provide for them a median, no less than the median FTE dollar factor for those courts that have less than 50, a need of 50 FTEs. So what column E shows you is which courts, when you apply the BLS to the standard amount statewide, we get a number that is less than the median of all courts that have a need of less than 50 FTEs. Any questions on that piece before I keep moving to the right? Okay, so as an example, I want to pick on Debbie since she's there, and she can, I know she's there for Plumas. Plumas County, if you apply their BLS factor times the statewide FTE dollar allotment, it would be just under $40,000. They have fewer than a need of less than 50 FTEs, so then we compare their dollar amount of $39,991 to the median dollar allotment that would be provided to all courts with less than 50 FTEs, which happens to be $43,866. Since their number of $39,991 is less than $43,866, then instead they would receive $43,866 per employee instead of $39,991. So that calculation would impact 9 courts who would receive that slightly higher amount in order to try and provide a dollar amount that seems a little bit more reasonable given the size of their organizations. So that's the second recommendation of the group. So then following on, as you digest that to page 29 again from Judge Good's question, what we tried to show here is what is the impact of those two recommendations together, and Judge Good, you're correct, there isn't one that shows just the change for the three-year average BLS for the smaller courts. But if you look at column G, what column G is saying is what is the difference between these two recommendations and the need for each court? This is on the need side of the model, not the allocation, the need side. what would be the difference between these recommendations and what that court's need would be if all that changed was updating to the 2012 BLS numbers. So you can see for Alpine, for example, these recommendations result in a slight decline in their need, where for Colusa, there's an increase in their need. So there, obviously, it varies by court, by jurisdiction, both for the smaller and the larger courts. Again, this is on need. This is not on the actual allocation.
Let me pause. I think this might be a good place to pause before Jake moves on to he's already discussed recommendations 1 and 2. Before he moves on to recommendation number 3, let me invite questions or comments on the recommendations 1 and 2.
And comments in particular from those who participated in the conversation, so you can sort of provide some color and flavor for the group if needed. We had lots and lots and lots of discussions about this.
Debbie?
Well, one of the things that we were all trying to do in this subcommittee is put together recommendations that were defensible, that had some logic behind them, that were not based on a lot of the emotions and needs of individual courts. And where we could, we wanted the recommendations to apply to all 58 trial courts, even though we were asked to look at the Cluster 1, where it made sense to apply to all 58 to give them the value of that change. That's what we wanted to do.
Okay, Cheryl.
Yes, Sherry.
Are you going to take each recommendation separately?
We don't have to. We could. We could at least get rid of items 1 and 2, recommendations 1 or 2.
I would make a recommendation that we support recommendations
1 and 2. And I second.
Any discussion on recommendations 1 and 2? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay. So on this one, I really would like to encourage, if you have any questions, interrupt me. One of the challenges on the next set, which we're talking about moving from the need side of the model over to the allocation side of the model, is that it's going to get a little bit potentially, especially because I'm on the phone and I can't gauge people's reactions, that it might get a little confusing about, are we talking about need or are we talking about allocation? So please interrupt me, jump in, and I'll try to be slowly as I can. But I do know this whole dialogue had a lot of conversation around it and a lot of effort went into it, and I want to make sure that I'm clearly presenting that for everyone. So what we're moving on to is related to recommendations 3 and 4, and so those are to, number 3 is to establish an absolute funding floor, so again, this is funding, not need, of $750,000 for 2014, and a graduated floor that grows at 3 additional levels up to just under $1.875 million, where the floor is based on a court's WAFM funding need, and I'll explain what that means in a moment. And then recommendation 4 is that for courts whose funding model-related funding is below the absolute floor, then that they be funded at that floor. And for courts who'd receive a graduated floor funding level, that their allocation will be determined through two additional analyses. And one is if that graduated funding floor is less than the prior year allocation plus 10%, then the graduated floor would be provided. But if the graduated floor is greater than that court's prior year allocation plus 10%, then the higher of either the prior year's allocation plus 10% or the court's allocation, if no floor was applied, would be provided. Okay, I would not imagine that makes a whole lot of sense yet, so let me walk through what all that means. The group got together. And we asked for volunteers from the Cluster 1 courts to help solve this question of, we have a brand new county in California, and that brand new county is formed. What would it take before to be sure that they can receive and adjudicate and hear their very first filing? So maybe they had some transfers in, so they have some hearings set on their first Monday, but they're also going to have some filings that come in the door, and they're going to need to be an operational court. But workload really can't drive that initial day, or maybe that initial year. And we need to make sure that they are able to be operational. So to answer that question, we asked for volunteers from the Cluster 1 courts, the smallest courts, to kind of embark on this process, open up their general ledger, their full accounting report, so that we could try and determine what that looks like. And we did have 5 volunteers participated. So those were Plumas County, Sierra County, Amador, Modoc, and Trinity Superior Courts. And so, along with me, and so the six of us got on a number of phone calls. We looked through the general ledger details and tried to address this question. And we did so in two parts. One was we tried to identify, well, on that first day, how many people would you need in order to serve the public and make sure that we can support the judges so that they can adjudicate cases? And second, what were the operating costs that would be necessary to open that new court? So on page 30, what you see is a table that looks at first the staffing component, and it lays out what the group believed, being very cautious, and to Debbie's point, very reasonable, trying to identify not what is the ideal court, because certainly none of us are in an ideal situation, but what is the bare minimum that someone could survive with. And so in this chart, we have a court executive officer. We have three FTEs for processing, and I'll explain that in a second. One administrative support person to be doing the HR, the fiscal, the internal control-related activities we need to do. A courtroom clerk and a half a court reporter. So that comes to 6.5 people. And the reason for three processing clerks is, in the discussion, is that you need to you may have one person who's focused on the more civil area, one person who's focused on the more criminal area, and then you need a third person who really is going to be there to address the fact that people have vacation and they get sick, and that's throughout the whole organization. So you need to have some degree of backup support, and that's really where the third person comes in. They obviously have a daily job, but when we look at these things as administrators, right, we try to think about those people not being there. And so then going across this chart, that's column A. So any questions on the staffing complement?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. And I have some nuances we'll get to in a second. So then we broke it out by Program 10 and Program 90 because that makes a difference on benefits for the WAFLA model. Column C is then the dollar amount that's applied for those FTEs, and that's based on what's already in the WAFLA model for the court executive officer, and then for the other staff, we use that same median FTE factor that we just talked about a second ago. That is the average, the median dollar amount for all courts of under 50 FTE needs. That's the 43,866. The salary-driven benefits was the average Program 90 and Program 10 salary-driven benefits for the five volunteer courts that participated, and column E is the average of non-salary-driven benefits for those five courts that participated. And so column F there, it just does the multiplication and addition across the table. So you get a total personnel cost there, $530,000. So that's the first part. That's the personnel part. I'm going to pause for a second. Any questions on the salary-driven benefits or FTE dollar amount? Okay. So then the question became, how are we going to look at operating expenses? And we looked at this in two separate ways. So we looked at it within just the WAFLA model itself, and so the sort of bolded box you see there looks at what is the operating expense per FTE, and that dollar amount is in the current WAFLA model for Cluster 1 courts is $27,928. So if you multiply 6.5 FTEs from column A times that number, you get to the total that's shown there on the next line, $181,000. So that's fine. That's within the WAFLA model, but our question was, is that really enough? And so as part of the small group, specifically, you know, Debbie Norrie and Lee Kirby went in great detail through the accounting reports to look at what really would be spent by a very small court in order to operate. They took out major one-time expenses that, you know, might not be there that first year and tried to find a very reasonable number that would include, you know, software that needs to be purchased and paper and supplies and those sorts of items. And they came up in this sort of dotted box below of a number of $168,000. Which we thought these two processes happened separately. Just we happened to be taking two different approaches and came back in a meeting to look at the numbers, and they were shockingly similar. So based on that analysis, to keep things simple, we decided to recommend using the existing dollar amount that is in the WAFLA model, the almost $28,000 per FTE. So that's why you see the bolded box above. Any questions on that analysis? So then we just add those numbers together, $530,000 for personnel, $181,000 change for OE&E, and we got a total floor need of $711,876. But we are recommending it be $750,000. And the reason for that is that the staffing complement we've put together here does not include expenses that are necessary for probate investigations or child custody recommending counseling or self-help services. And so those things do exist. Those are in the WAFA model. We didn't think it'd be appropriate to be trying to plug in exact numbers for that. And so this rounding up to $750,000 is intended to incorporate some of those other items that may not be included. So that gives us the recommendation of there be a hard floor of $750,000, but no court would receive an allocation of less than that. That's not need, that's actual allocation. Okay, so not hearing no questions there. So then went on to now page 31, and the concept that, well, $750,000 may be a nice hard floor, and that acknowledges that there reaches a point where courts are so small that workload, looking at strictly workload, isn't sufficient due to it. Infrastructure costs. But the reality is that as you grow a little bit bigger than that, economies of scale don't immediately kick in. It's not that when you reach $751,000 that now all of that base infrastructure is gone and simply using the workload will address your needs. And so we looked at this concept of using a graduated floor. You'll see on this sheet we were at the time calling it variable funding floor. So we realized that using a word graduated seems to be more understandable because the floor doesn't vary. It just moves to different levels. And what this is based on this column, is looking at everyone's WAFM calculated need. Now we're talking need again. And that as that need slowly grows up to a particular point, some portion of their need or funding needs to be driven based on a lack of economy of scale, and some portion needs to be driven on workload. And so what this looks at is taking from the smallest court of a need of less than $750,000, around by a dollar on each of these, and growing by $500,000 in need until you reach $2.25 million, we wanted to create a graduated floor. And the question may be, well, why stop at $2.25 million? And the answer is that when you look at the funding need, there is actually a break point at that number, and there's a large gap between that a court of funding need at $2.25 million and the next court above that. So there seems to be a very natural size difference there. There also is a change there in funding need between courts that have the minimum number of judges allocated, 2.3 judicial need, and the next level of judgeship. So there's two natural breaks there at $2.25 million. So we did then, sort of jumping to the far right to not get into too much detail of the actual mechanics of the calculation, is created a variable, a graduated funding floor at each of those need levels, as we said before, that grows from $750,000 to then a funding amount of $875,000, $1.25, and $1.875 million. And again, that on that context, that's an allocation floor, not a need floor. Below that, you'll see we wanted to show what it looks like to apply that model. And we included this here just so you could see some of the work product we did. I'm actually going to skip over this chart and go to the next page because this just showed a theoretical application in a situation that if 100% of our funding was allocated under WAFM, given its current funding, what would happen with the floors. And so we didn't look at a real model to start with. We wanted to make sure these are real numbers, but we don't want to see what the actual courts were. That's why they're lettered. They're not actual court names. And we did it in a scenario that wasn't the 85% old money, 15% new money model, but 100% allocation. Okay. So if anyone has questions on that chart, I'm happy to answer them, but I don't think it's beneficial to the conversation.
Jake?
Yeah.
The number 750, you liked it because it was a rounded number, but going forward, there would be adjustments to these numbers, and I know we discussed this. Can you explain why we would change these numbers as we go forward, because there would be updates to some of these averages? Just because these aren't like a fixed number. These would have adjustments if we went forward throughout the years.
Right. We'd need to change it each year because, again, when you go into that actual calculation we used, we looked at the current year's FTE dollar allotment, which is going to change each year slightly, and also the salary-driven, which would be retirement costs, and non-salary-driven or health benefits costs. Those are going to increase. So we would need to run this analysis every year. That sort of averaging factor saying, okay, let's get to a round number, I guess, and accommodate some of these things that we can't clearly define is going to have to be done a little bit each year, and a little bit of analysis will have to go into it. Because that number does need to grow to accommodate the fact that there are cost of living changes and inflation.
Right. Thank you. That's what I just wanted to make sure that was clear to everyone.
Okay, so I do want to move on to pages 32 through four pages here, right? So 36, I think. This is a theoretical, so I know earlier, as Lucko had mentioned, that they were looking at how the $100 million might be allocated, and it's a theoretical run. This also is theoretical. It uses real numbers, but it hasn't been updated for new filings data that will be in the new run. It hasn't been updated for new salary and benefit numbers that would have to happen. But it was done to be able to show, to Judge Good's earlier question, what changes if we implement this floor. So I want to walk through what the columns say first and then pick a couple of courses to walk through. So going across the top in column A, I see we still left Butte as a column title, sorry about that. But to the right of that is the baseline operations funding. That is what was included in the baseline less the historical funding. So it doesn't include the $63 million from last year or the WAFM reallocation. So the next one is the WAFM calculated funding need based on the adjustments that we're making as recommendations only. Doesn't have the new filings data. Column C is then the court's proportional funding, the baseline funding. And then court D is the WAFM need proportion. So instead of the baseline funding proportion, this is the need proportion. And then column F1 then says, well, what would that course funding be if there's no floor applied? So so for Sierra County, it says $506,000. Column F2 there shows you what that difference is from their baseline funding. Column G shows what the graduated floor would be for that court based on its funding need. G1 shows whether the floor would apply. Skipping down two pages, column H1 shows what that court's allocation would be plus 10%. I'm going to explain that in a second. And then H2 is the allocation they would receive if no floor was applied. And then ultimately H3 is what floor would be given to them if they do need a floor. And then I1 and I2 are calculation fields. And then column I3 would be what each court's allocation would be under a scenario where floors exist. And so that's going to be different for each court, because obviously if we are going to increase one court's allocation, then someone else has to decrease in our current situation. And then column L shows you what the difference is for each court as a result of us applying this floor model. Okay, so let me pick a court. I'll pick Sierra since it's there on the top line. So if we go back to page 32, Sierra's baseline funding was $542,000. Their WAFM need is calculated at just under $338,000. I'm going to skip over to column F1. Their allocation of no floor was applied would be $506,000, which would be a reduction for them of about $36,000. Because of their funding level, because their need is less than $750,000, their funding floor would be $750,000. That is greater than what the allocation would be if no floor existed, so there's a yes in column G1. If we go down, going down two more pages again. Because of that, in H3, because their funding is at $750,000, which is the formula that says there, they would get $750,000 because that's the base we would give to any court. And so that would be their allocation. So as a result of applying the floor, they would actually receive, all the way over there on column L, about $243,000 more than they would if the floor didn't exist. With me so far? Then I want to pick a slightly larger court. Let's go with Plumas County. So in Plumas County, they're back on page 32. Their historic funding is about $1.4 million. Their need is about $1.5 million. Again, skipping three columns to the right. Their allocation then under the WAFA model would be $1.376 million, which would be a reduction of about $64,000. But to our purpose, the next column says that their funding floor would be $1.25 million. So the question is, well, why is that? Well, that's because their funding need is $1.5 million, and so based on the graduated funding floor model, their minimum funding would be $1.25 million if the floor would apply. Actually, so then to the far right of that, it says, would the funding floor apply? And in this circumstance, the answer is no, because their allocated floor would be $1.3 million. The funding floor is $1.2 million. And I just want to point this one out because, as Debbie was saying, we weren't the objective here is to find something that is reasonable. We know that it's a zero-sum game here. Some courts, some things benefit one court, some things don't benefit a court. We're just trying to find the most logical solution to the funding model. So theirs would be a no. I'll pick a larger court. Let me pick on myself, just because I can. So on the next page, page 33, Placer County is listed there, and I'm just going to skip to column F1. It says here that the allocation, if no FOR was applied, would be 11,291. And then if you go down two pages to page 35, the actual allocation that our court would receive would be 11,282. So what that results in, if you go to the right, is a slight decrease, right, as a result of the floor being applied. It's not. And the reason for that is because the floor gets applied, we need to provide that funding from everybody else. So it does result in a decrease for those of us that are above the floor and an increase for those that would be below the floor. I want to talk to one other issue, and that's that when we did run the model initially, and this gets to why we have this 10, this weird column H1, why is there this prior year plus 10%? And the answer is that it did, when we ran the model the first time, we did have a circumstance where the floor was substantially more than the court has now, today. I think it was multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars more. And as a result of that, it didn't feel in the economy that we're in the state that we're all in and trying to make do as best we can, it felt like it wasn't quite equitable to be shifting that much money from the other courts in a situation where it would result in a large increase in a court's budget. So what the group decided to recommend is that if the floor would give a court more than 10% of what they had the prior year, then they just get that prior year plus 10% amount instead. So they would continue to grow, but it wouldn't be this large influx of money in a time where we're all trying to make do with limited resources. Let me open it for questions on that floor item.
Jake, this is Judge Earl. I had a question on the 10%. Remind me, was our recommendation that would be how it would be applied in future years at L as well, that we would always have this 10% view of the floor?
Yes.
Jake, this is Chris Volkers. Is that, excuse me, is that 10%? Give me an example of that 10%. Where is that applied? What county? So I can see it on here.
Okay, let's see. Okay, it applies on Mono County. So if you're on page 34, right, Mono County, their prior year plus 10% is $1.35 million.
Got it.
Their allocation, if no floor was applied, would be $1.27 million. But if my memory serves, their funding floor, I think, is $1.874
million. So NYO's another one. I see
right.
It now. Okay, thank you.
Right. So instead of, if we didn't apply that, then for Mono County, the allocation for the funding floor would be $1.8 million. And so this was just the group felt there needs to be some, that's a pretty large increase in 1 year. And so the following year, it would be the prior allocation plus 10%. So if this held, then the next year for Mono County, that would be $1.5 million. So that growth would still be there in the potential future years, but not all in 1 year.
Okay. Thank you.
Judge Good.
Jake, I'm trying to understand column L. And I understand column L, I thought, as saying how the rest of us are paying to guarantee the counties that are getting a floor. And so I think that all of us would have a negative number, but some counties have a positive number who aren't getting a floor. So, for example, if you look at, I think it's Yuba and Siskiyou, instead of helping to pay for that, they seem to be getting more money. How does that happen?
I wish I had an answer for you, Judge. They're all very low numbers, and the only explanation that I've been able to come up with is it has to do with their percentage of the share doesn't change very much as the math happens of removing courts from doing their percent share, and then it just changes it by rounding. Maybe it's in the hundreds place or some dollar amount. So, you know, what's $838 total for that's Solano, right? And so I don't really have a very good explanation other than that's how the math seems to have come out. But it is interesting.
David? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a follow-up, Judge Good?
Well, I'm just having a hard time conceptually how, if we're all sharing in the cost, some people are getting more money. And I mean, just conceptually, it seems to me that ought to be a negative number, even if you're rounding. I'm just puzzled by it.
But it's possible in the execution that signs would be off, even at the small numbers.
Yeah.
Possible.
I also have a comment. Is that you have to remember that the WAFM does not include the Cluster 1 courts at all, that they were excluded. So when the WAFM numbers were run in terms of people's, in quote, percentages of the or looking at allocation, the Cluster 1 courts, 15 courts or something, were not included at all. So it's hard to look at in terms of saying people are, I mean, if you're counting on a certain amount and then thinking you're having to give it up, but those courts were never included. And one of the things that I think that we struggle with as a subcommittee in terms of the, was how to bring in, because one of the proposals from some of the courts were to continue to exclude the Cluster 1 courts. And I think there was a real effort made, especially through Debbie and Jake, to say, Let's try to answer that question as to what a trial court needs. And that was that basic, what if we opened up the new court of Josephine or whatever? And, you know, it's really the first time I think the trial courts have ever done that kind of an exercise. And then when we saw how it was going to play out, there were some unusual numbers simply because of it's things that we couldn't really explain. So a proposal was made to use that 10%. In other words, those courts would see that increase. They could be funded quicker over 10 years rather than 20 years that might take for the whole trial court to get reinvested. I mean, that was one of the reasons there was that 10% over 10 years it was looked at. It was sort of a compromise just to see if there was some way to make a proposal to bring in all of the Cluster 1 courts into WAFM.
David?
Thank you. Judge Earl, the other thing that I wanted to, draw additional attention to is, I know there was some thinking that, you know, why cap it at 10% to try to assist some of these courts that have this gap. And the fact is that the money is not money that is loosely available. It is actually going to result in a reduction in the allocation. And even if it's a $75,000 reduction to a court, that represents an employee that that court would otherwise be able to hang on to. So, you know, there's a lot of sensitivity to the fact that courts are, everybody's in need of additional resources, but also the sensitivity that courts need to continue to function, and coupled with the fact that we have, you know, donor courts, so to speak, or resort under-resourced and woefully under-resourced courts, it seemed collectively that it was a very good compromise that everybody supported.
Any other questions? Judge Johnson?
It's not really a question, it's so much as a comment, and thank you especially to Jake and Debbie, because just our court in particular, but I think everybody experiences this to some degree, there really aren't very good numbers to work with either, which has been part of the challenge. In particular, in Trinity County, I don't think there are even any BLS statistics that are reported for Trinity County. It's like we don't exist. So we had to pick a number, and it was a one-to-one, and that actually affected us in a way that nobody predicted. But I think this committee has done a really good job of pulling together an incredible amount of data and concerns and making very well-founded recommendations. I'm just hats off.
I also don't want it to go unnoticed that we should also thank those courts that agreed to open their books for Debbie and Jake and folks to look through. That was invaluable to this recommendation, and we appreciate that. Mike?
Knowing how much effort went into this and how many iterations of effort went into this, and Jake Chatters is to be commended for an incredible amount of detail work that helped us explain all this, I'd be prepared to make a motion to adopt staff recommendations number 3 and 4. I think it's a great compromise. I think it addresses a real problem, and it sets some necessary floors and caps that I think will ultimately get us where we need to be.
Second that.
Is that you, Judge Hicks, that seconded?
Yes.
Someone else beat him. Who else seconded? Gary Carter, John Fitton. So we have a motion to adopt recommendations 3 and 4 and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The motion carries.
Okay, thank you. And that was very kind of you, Mike, but it was a very big group effort. And the whole committee, the group, of course, that participated, Debbie's help, staff at the AOC. I mean, it was an interesting effort to embark on, and I'm